Good morning and welcome to the Monday, November 18th edition of Mountain Money. I'm your host, Roger Goldman. I'm here with my co-host, Kevin Kennedy, on a chilly Monday. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Roger. Good morning, Park City.
And to help keep everybody warm, we've got a pretty busy schedule this morning. We're going to start with a local CPA, Stephen Bowers, to discuss the BOI report. I'm not sure anybody knows what that is, but I think he's going to explain it to us. Then we're going to discuss estate planning and trust with Crystal Bowman Carter, an estate planning attorney here in Park City.
Next, we'll learn about the grand opening of the new Grand Hyatt in East Village, and we'll finish our program with Abby Phillips from Junction Commons to learn details about their first annual tree lighting.
Many people in Summit and Wasatch counties run their own businesses, and that structure might be an LLC, an S-Corp, or a C-Corp, but they all have something new in common, a requirement for a business ownership information report under the Corporate Transparency Act. Now, if you haven't heard about it, you're not alone. Here to give us a perspective on this BOI is Stephen Bowers, CPA. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
So let's start with the basics. What is this BOI report thing?
All right, so basically more compliance that we have down the road. So basically the Corporate Transparency Act, you know, trying to prevent money laundering on a large scale with small businesses. So basically what we have to do is fill out this application, very simple application, make sure we go to the website, very basic information, name the owner's name, mailing address. We cannot use a P.O. box, okay? So we have to use a physical address, some other basic information, and a photo ID.
And what is behind this? What are they trying to accomplish with it?
Well, again, you know, they use the term anti-laundering, money laundering, so trying to just get a handle on everyone in the United States that owns a business, just in case there is some type of illegal acts, they can quickly find them.
Okay, so now, if we have an LLC or a C-Corp or S-Corp, you've already registered with the state.
Correct.
So now the federal government wants our information as well?
Absolutely. And there's only a few exemptions from that. There's about 23 of those. If you own a large corporation, basically monitored by the SEC, nonprofits, and some other regulatory like CPA firms, insurance companies that are monitored by the states, but everyone else has to register, or there are potential penalties.
And there's a definition that I believe as to what kinds of companies have to do this registration. What's the buzzword? Is it a business that's registered with the state, something like that?
Yeah, basically, the only ones that they have not defined yet are sole proprietors. But anyone that does register, LLC, S corporation, C corporation, anyone 25% or more ownership has to make that registration.
Now, here's a good one. So I've got a couple LLCs and an S-Corp. Did I get anything in the mail? Because I don't remember getting anything in the mail. There's no information that was sent to me from the federal government telling me you have to do this. Roger and I were chatting a month and a half ago, and he told me about it.
Correct. Yeah, very difficult. And so we have a lot of societies, organizations like the Journal of Accountancy, for example, that they are trying to push back to give us some relief and timing of this. So that way that small businesses that are already burdened with everything else of operations give a little more time and reprieve from these filings and the penalties that could come down the road.
And what kind of penalties are we talking about?
So right now, so we have until January 1st of 2025. Okay. Once we pass that, you have 30 days from the day the corporation is registered with the state. They are saying fines of $591 per day, up to $10,000. And here's what's scary: if you're unwilling to do this, they are threatening 2 years in prison.
Holy cow!
Now this is pretty basic. Again, going back to Kevin's point, this is pretty basic information that one would assume the state would have to have on file in order for you to be registered. And how long does it take to fill out a form like this?
Honestly, probably 5 minutes or less, okay?
Okay?
But again, compliance. Here's where I see a lot of penalties, a lot of money going out the door for small business. Something as simple as an annual report you register every year with the state is overlooked a lot. So that's why we always look for seek third-party help, CPA, your attorney, someone that knows this. That way they can help support you throughout that process.
So if you have an LLC, an S-Corp, a C-Corp, and you have a CPA who, you know, like you, do you do this for your clients?
We do. In the beginning, they thought it was potentially a legal process, but now that third parties are getting involved. And again, so once, for example, in my firm, once we set up an entity, we do this immediately, right then and there as the process, so we don't have to think about it moving forward.
So with a single member LLC, which I think is probably the most common form of organization you'd see for small businesses in town, so you just have to have a photo ID from the sole member as part of this process?
Correct.
Basically,
exactly.
Name, address, picture ID, and that's it? I'm done?
That's it. Upload it to the website. But there is a lot of, obviously, everything has scams, right? So make sure you do go to the .org website, so that way you are not giving your personal information out to scammers.
Yeehaw. Holy cow. This is just... So I did one of mine a couple days ago just to see how it was. It wasn't too hard, but hopefully I didn't click on the wrong site, you know?
Absolutely.
As far as I know, it was good. Now, do you have to put your address that you registered with the state, or do you put your address that you file your personal income taxes from?
Well, like anything else, consistency's key here, right? So I would say wherever the business operates out of, if you do not have a physical location, your home mailing address is probably the best case.
And that brings up a related question. What if your business is dormant? I mean, it still exists, but there's no activity going on. Do you still need to file?
Absolutely. So here again, abundance of caution, right? I would go ahead and do this simple application, get it submitted, because again, we do not know exactly how they're going to hold us accountable.
Okay. All right. I'm Googling right now this BOI. Let's see where we...
So, Stephen...
Bank of India.
While Kevin's Googling, I'm going to ask a question that we didn't prepare for, and that is, you know, with the election and what we're seeing now, what is your crystal ball telling you about what we might expect with respect to the tax, you know, the tax rates and the other kinds of things that were... We saw very different agendas from the two campaigns.
Sure.
What are we expecting this year in terms of a potential tax cut?
Well, what's interesting, as we know, the Trump tax is going through 2025. I would predict that we will see something very similar to that. Nothing drastic changing. We probably, hopefully, will see some reduction in tax rates, capital gains, and some of these other areas that they were pushing to really tax the taxpayer on, not happen. So.
And just to make it clear, the number that the tax provisions from the 2017, as I recall, tax cut, those are set to expire this year. And they were set up that way to facilitate the ability for the for Congress at that time to sort of stay within certain limits. In other words, they had to sunset in order to allow them to talk about what the impact on the deficit would be. So now, they might have sunsetted this year, I mean, next year, had the election gone differently. But now, you think most of those will not be sunsetted?
I think so. I think they will not, right? I think they will be renewed. And one of the ones that I see the most is the small business credit. I think that'll get extended. This is a huge credit, 25%, that could help small businesses save some tax dollars. And also, going into estate planning, I think that lifetime exemption will also be extended as well.
And we'll be talking about that in our next segment, since we have an estate planning attorney.
Yes.
But you mentioned capital gains. What would happen to the capital gains rate if it's sunsetted? Would it have gone back up again?
It could, but I think, again, I think
it's
they're
going to happen.
It's not going to happen. They're going to hold that solid, and then they even could potentially bring that down associated with your adjusted gross income and things like that. Okay. So it could also help stimulate action.
And I suspect that as we start seeing bills come through next year, we may have you back to help explain what's going on.
Yeah. So I found a site. So it's fincen.gov/BOI. Does that sound right?
That's it.
All right, guys. Jot that down. We've just spent a few minutes with Stephen Bowers, CPA, about the BOI, which is Beneficial Ownership Information Report from the U.S. government, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network.
You can't take it with you is not just a good play. It's a fundamental truth. Once we're dead, something has to be done with our stuff, actual, digital, and to some extent, familial. And that's where estate planning comes in. To explain estate planning and how it can make things just a little easier on your heirs, we have Park City Attorney Crystal Bowman Carter. Good morning, Crystal. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Roger. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about let's start with the big picture. What exactly is an estate plan?
An estate plan generally consists of your will, a durable power of attorney, a health care directive, And a trust, if you need a trust.
So why do I need all that stuff?
Well, if you don't have that stuff, the law says what happens. So if you want to change the what the law says happens, then you need an estate plan. I think during your lifetime, it's more important to have a health care directive and a durable power of attorney than anything else. If you have a blended family, then it becomes even more important. Mm-hmm. If you want to change who would naturally make decisions for you, either financially or medically, then it's very important to have an estate plan.
All right, we're going to dig into these one at a time. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I went to law school and some of this sounds like jargon to me. So, Crystal, what is a durable power of attorney? Why do I need one of those?
Well, power of attorney can give somebody the power to manage your finances or your health care. When we say durable power of attorney as estate planners, we're usually talking about a financial durable power of attorney, where you're delegating somebody to make financial decisions for you when you can't speak for yourself. And sometimes you can delegate that power to somebody to make those financial decisions immediately.
So now when you say when someone can't speak for themselves, is it because they're dead or because they are... incapacitated.
That's incapacitated.
It. Okay.
A durable power of attorney dies with you, and at that point, it's replaced by your will, which is what causes probate to be to come into play.
And we're going to get to that. So, first document we talked about was the durable power of attorney, and let's explain how that relates to a healthcare advance directive.
So, an advanced healthcare directive is another form of a power of attorney, and you're delegating healthcare decision making to an agent that you have chosen.
And why do you want to do that?
So that you don't have to go to court and have a court-appointed guardian make those decisions. It's a gift to your family.
So give us the scenario where it comes into play.
You're in the hospital and you can't speak for yourself, and somebody has to make decisions about what kind of health care you want. And even more importantly, about whether to withdraw health care if you're close to death, unlikely to recover, if you're in a persistent vegetative state. Let's say you are somebody who doesn't want to be kept alive artificially. And you're married, or you have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, and you want them to make the decisions, but your parents would keep you alive indefinitely.
Mm.
In that unmarried situation especially, your parents would likely have more say over what happens to you.
And I'm going to guess well, here...
Without the healthcare directive.
Yeah, well...
And I'm going to guess here is that if you don't have one of those... You have you're putting the people in the medical community, the hospital people, at sort of a weird place because they got to figure out who can make these decisions, right? If you have a piece of paper, they know who can make these decisions.
Right, and if nobody can make the decisions, then they have to keep you alive.
Yeah, that was like that story in Florida, that woman Schiavo.
Yeah, Terry Schiavo.
Yeah, some years ago. So she did not have a medical directive.
Right, and then your family, while they're grieving and trying to help you and going through this difficult process, are also going to court to figure out what is the best thing to do for you.
Okay, so that's now the next piece in the puzzle that we talked about is?
The will.
And what's in the will? And what happens if what's in it, what happens if I don't have one?
So if you don't have one and you have a typical family structure or you want things to pass the way the law says, no big deal. All of your assets pass to your next closest living relative. If you're married and all of your kids are from the same marriage, it all passes to your spouse. If you're married and you have children, a blended family, then a certain percentage passes to your spouse. The first $75,000 plus half of your estate, and the other half goes to your children. But that's not how most people want to do it. So you have to put that in place to make sure that you have to put a will in place to make sure that your wishes are followed.
Now, when you say that, it sounds pretty simple. But in the reality, if somebody dies without a will, aren't there some complexities from having to deal with a court system? Explain how that works.
So if people often think that if they have a will, they avoid probate. And the opposite is true. If you have a will, you're guaranteeing probate for your probatable assets. Assets that are subject to probate are those that aren't jointly owned and passed by joint ownership and that don't have a beneficiary designation. So, Roger, if you and I own a house together, joint tenants with right survivorship, and I die, you get the house, no probate. If you and I own a house together as tenants in common, just a different way to hold title, and I die, my section has, my interest in that property has to go through probate to be given to my heirs. It won't go to you.
And then the court decides whether you're whether any or all of your heirs get it?
No, the court supervises the process and makes sure it passes according to what the law says.
And you have to schedule that, and meanwhile your family's grieving, and then...
Right. You know, in Utah, probate's a fairly simple process. I'm not worried about people who die without a will in Utah when they like the statutory scheme. In California, where I'm also licensed, you have to have a trust. don't have a will-based plan, because the process there is long and expensive and difficult. Lots of people here in the Park City area own properties in multiple jurisdictions. They might have a vacation home somewhere else in California or New York. And in that case, you also need to avoid probate with either joint ownership or a trust.
Hmm. And let's say that's a rather natural segue into, what does this trust thing do for me?
A trust is a contract or a document, kind of like a toy box that you put all your toys in, and then there are some rules about how to get those toys out of the box. If your assets are owned by a trust at your death, they avoid probate and they pass according to the rules that you've set. So you will designate who is the trustee, which is the person who has legal title to those assets, gets to follow the rules of the trust and distribute the assets according to the terms of your trust without any court supervision or interference, and according to your wishes.
Now, many people hear the word trust, and they think about something that, you know, some rich guy sets up for his children, right, where they don't really have access to it, and they only get money when they turn 25 or 30. We're talking about a different kind of trust here as a general matter, aren't we? Can you explain what a revocable trust is and how it really works?
And you got it right. The difference is a revocable versus an irrevocable trust. So for 99% of the people that are going to have trusts, all they need is a revocable living trust. It's a trust that you can amend and change and update from time to time to reflect your wishes and your life circumstances. You can create protections for your spouse or for people you might feel need help after your death, you know, children, spendthrifts, people that aren't great with money, and set up a trustee that manages their funds on their behalf. When you die, the terms of your trust become irrevocable, and then the beneficiary of the trust, if it remains in place, has some asset protection against creditors and has to follow the rules of those trusts without changing them.
Hmm. And what this does enable you to do is to avoid probate, because the distribution of assets upon death is controlled by the terms of the trust?
That's correct.
Okay. And if I have one of these trusts, am I going to put all kinds of stuff in it?
Yes.
Like,
well, yes.
What do I put in?
You got to put all your toys in it.
Literally all your toys, right?
Right. Well, your estate. Everybody has an estate, and the estate is everything that you own. Mm-hmm. It can be your house, if you have a house. It can be your multiple houses, your LLCs. I heard you talking about the BOIs earlier. We want to make sure that your interest in an LLC is in your trust so it can avoid probate. All of your personal property, artwork, collections, things like that. And then your investment accounts. There are some things that you can't put in your trust. Your IRAs, retirement accounts, mm-hmm. don't go in your trust. Mm-hmm. And if you want the terms of your trust to control a retirement account, a qualified retirement account, you make the trust the beneficiary at your death.
Right. Now, going with that, what about intellectual property? Is that in your trust? What about digital assets, whether it's your digital photo album or your LinkedIn page? I mean, does that stuff go?
Not really.
No, okay. No.
Intellectual property, yes, you can assign rights to your trust. But things like your Facebook account, your LinkedIn account, even Bitcoin, it's hard to get into a trust.
Oh. So if you make money off your, let's say you're a YouTuber and you make money, that's your business. Can that go in a trust?
Well, if your business is an LLC that owns your
YouTube channel. Gotcha.
Yeah, that's pretty easy. But if you have copyrights and things like that, you can get those into your trust.
Okay.
We live in an affluent community, Crystal, and my guess is that more than once you've sat down with people who are concerned about how best to deal with the passing of money onto young adults or children. What are some of the considerations, and what kinds of, how do you advise people on how to do that?
It really depends on the life stage. Mm-hmm. So when the children are babies, we don't know their financial personalities. Mm-hmm. You don't know what's going to happen. And we're usually talking about protection versus convenience. And if somebody has a younger child, we're looking at protection. So we want to create guardrails for those children even after they become adults, so that they're treated as if they would, the way they would have been treated if their parents had survived. You know, make sure there's enough to pay for college or vocational schools before making distributions or dividing shares among the children. I almost said the three children because I have three children.
They're listening.
Yeah. No, they're not. If they're older children and you've seen that they're either financially responsible or not financially responsible, or they have special needs, or they have substance abuse problems, then there are different concerns. And we build guardrails into those trusts to address those concerns.
Okay, so does everyone need an estate plan? If not, who needs an estate plan? Who needs this? If you have any one thing, if you own a house, you need an estate plan, I'm gonna guess.
You know the saying, surgeon's cut, estate planners plan estates. I think everybody needs an estate plan, but I frequently see people that with very straightforward families that can avoid having an estate plan because they have a nuclear family. The statutes mirror what they want to happen. They can designate a beneficiary for all of their assets. They can have a house with a transfer on death deed. That's another way to avoid probate. But that's the minority. Mm-hmm. Everyone else needs an estate plan. And from my point of view, the money eventually is going to work itself out, even if people are fighting over it. The most important two documents for you to have while you're alive, just for yourself, are a health care directive and a durable power of attorney.
And where does, if I'm concerned about, I have young children, and I'm concerned about what would happen to them if I died, is sort of making a suggestion or request for custody of those children, is that part of an estate plan as well?
Yeah, usually we nominate the guardian in the will. We also nominate a guardian in your power of attorney. And it is just that, a nomination, because circumstances change. Your best friend neighbor that lived across the street 10 years ago might not be the same person you would trust with your kids 10 years later because now they're off living in a commune. I was trying not to say a meth head or... So the court has to approve those nominations.
Yeah, gotcha.
But before we go, nothing fascinates people more than seeing a car accident or something that's gone horribly wrong. So what I want to hear about is one of the two or three things that you've had to deal with where you go, why did they do that? What were they thinking?
Oh, my God. I wasn't ready for that. Setting people up for fights.
That's really what I'm getting at. Yeah.
You're making this plan and you're forcing people who can't get along to get along with each other. Mm-hmm. But it's really unpredictable. You don't know how your children or your friends are going to manage things about 10% of the time, I would say. And then not being aware of how money and death changes your family and friends' relationship to your money.
You know, those stories we see about vicious fights erupting among siblings and relatives, that does happen in real life, doesn't it?
I deal with it all the time.
Oh. Now, do most people have a corporate trustee or a family member as trustee?
The vast majority choose an individual.
Okay.
A family member or a very close friend.
Gotcha.
A corporate trustee is great, but people don't want to spend the money. Also, a good solution for kind of an individual trustee will know your values, yeah, and a corporate trustee won't necessarily. So a lot of times when people are leaning towards a corporate trustee, there's a reason for it. I would say appoint an individual to serve as co-trustee with that corporate trustee.
Before we go, let's just touch briefly on the estate tax. We hear an awful lot about it, but almost nobody pays it, do they?
0.14% are subject to estate taxes. Mm-hmm. You know, we see plenty of people in Park City subject to estate taxes. This year, the exemption is going up from $13.61 million in 2024 to $13.99 million in 2025. With the recent election, we're less worried about it reverting back to 2017 levels.
Which it would now, unless they do something, right? It will revert. But we're thinking with the election, that's highly unlikely to happen.
Yes, we had the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was implemented during the Trump administration. I think that they're likely to extend it. Mm-hmm. We don't know, but it's giving some breathing room for our clients who need to do that type of estate planning.
Just think how busy you would have been had the election gone the other way, because people would be there would be people in this town who are thinking, "Ooh, I have $13 million," right?
Right, and for married couples, it's going to be $27.98 million because they can combine it. But we're still busy. We're still going to be busy, and I would urge people not to wait till the last minute. If you don't hear anything, don't go to your estate planner in October and expect to get your complex and sophisticated estate planning done before the end of the year if nothing changes.
We've been talking to Crystal Bowman Carter about estate planning. Thanks for spending time with us.
Thank you.
Driving on State Route 40 offers spectacular views of the Jordanelle, the Uintas, and the Heber Valley. We've all seen the construction at East Village over the past few years, and it's quite grand. And a big part of that is the Grand Hyatt. To share some info with you all, we're lucky to be joined by the General Manager and Area Vice President, Anthony Duggan. Anthony, good morning.
Good morning.
So, real quick, let's just jump into the details. Is it ski in, ski out?
Not quite ski in, ski out, but you can ski from about 100 yards away from the front door. We do actually have a shuttle that's going to be picking people up and dropping them off. So we wanted to make it as easy and as seamless as possible for guests.
I love it.
So let's zoom back a little bit. I'm driving down 40. I see this magnificent building. How many rooms? How many square feet? Give us the big picture details.
Sure. Yeah, we have 381 rooms. So it's a big hotel.
Wow.
A really big hotel. On top of the hotel, we have 55 luxury residences. And some of those are available for rent as well, which is going to be great. Give our guests a slightly... expanded option for places to stay. In addition to the rooms, though, we have 30,000 square feet of meeting space, which is just enormous. And this goes from a very private boardroom all the way up to a 10,000 square foot ballroom. So really something for everybody, from huge fundraisers that we can have there to your board meeting. It's can cover a lot.
30,000 square feet, that I would imagine that ranks you in one of the largest conference room spaces in the state, isn't it?
It certainly is. Some of the facilities in Salt Lake are going to be a little bit bigger than us, but certainly in the mountain region, in Park City, Deer Valley, we are the largest.
Now, will you be bringing conferences in, or will you be looking at what 10,000 square feet for the largest? Is how many people is that for a wedding?
We can probably get over 600 people in the room, so it's going to be very, very large events. But I'm thinking about the listening audience, and the fundraisers that we can do in that space are going to be absolutely incredible. And more importantly, we can get a lot of people into the ballroom as well. More people in the ballroom means more money for fundraisers, which is what we want to be able to assist with.
And let's talk a little bit about some of the other facilities, particularly for locals who probably won't be staying there. Tell us about the restaurant offerings.
This is where it gets really fun. We have a number of different restaurants, and I don't want to say that we've got something for everybody. We've got something for a lot of people, for sure. Our signature restaurant is called Remington Hall. And Remington Hall is really kind of rustic American fare, kind of an interesting, elevated take on classic dishes that everybody's going to be familiar with. It's going to be open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Breakfast, the lobster omelet. It is absolutely incredible and must be had. At dinner, the bison fillet is going over particularly well. I'm partial to the porterhouse that we have. It is insane, incredible presentation, and I think it's probably going to be one of those dishes that we're known for. In addition to our signature restaurant, downstairs we have Hidden Ace. Hidden Ace is our speakeasy bar, craft cocktails. I think it's a really inspired cocktail list. But I think one of the things I'm most proud about is that we're using that opportunity to showcase local musicians. Whether it's kind of more established local musicians like Nate Robinson or Chris Bender, or featuring some up-and-coming musicians and giving them a place, giving them a platform that they can use to showcase their skills. So really excited about that. And we have music. We're going to be opening anyway with music on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights, which is going to be super cool.
That's this week.
Starting this week.
Ooh.
Starting this week. Starting this Thursday. We open the doors on Wednesday.
It's 2 days.
2 days from now. It's gonna be incredible.
So you're having a relaxing week, not much going on, plenty of time to chat with us.
Absolutely.
Or a cup of coffee.
Talking of coffee, Okay. Talking of coffee, we have a coffee shop. And you're gonna get a sense of local here. We really want to showcase local as much as possible. Our coffee shop is gonna be called Double Blacks. Again, this opens on Wednesday as well. I guess kind of a mountainy ski name for it for sure. Mm-hmm. But Park City Roasters is the coffee that we're gonna be featuring in Double Blacks. So again, featuring local as much as we can.
Now you were talking. I'm going to go back to food real quick, because listeners know that I don't eat breakfast before I come in, because I love to hear about all the food. How big is that porterhouse?
It's huge. It's big enough for two people. Carved tableside. It is absolutely incredible.
And now the speakeasy style bar, is that going to have a daily après ski?
There's going to be après ski down there. We're also going to be doing après up in what we're calling our living room, and I'm glad that you brought that one up as well. So a living room is kind of the lobby bar just off of the front desk. It is it's got this incredible vibe to it. A lobby is very spacious, and it's an opportunity for guests to, I guess, see and be seen in the lobby. I would say probably the thing that I'm most excited about, there are a lot of things I'm excited about, but the thing that I'm most excited about with the opening is so I have an accent, it's an English accent.
Really?
I went to school, yeah, right. I went to school in England, and if there was something that I learned from my time in England, my favorite meal period in England is high tea.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
We wanted to do something similar at the Grand Hyatt Deer Valley, and we thought, how could we do high tea, but how could we make it better? We made high chocolate. Chef has his own recipe for hot chocolate that he is featuring. We did a blind taste test with a hot chocolate from Paris, which we've been told is the best. Unanimously, Chef's hot chocolate won. It is decadent, it is delicious, it is all the good things. And we're gonna be featuring this high chocolate experience in our living room.
Okay, I have to send a quick text to my wife and daughter. they love that stuff. Stay with me. Roger, you take over, because I'm gonna text them.
Okay, Anthony, so we've covered all the restaurants. We have the living room. We have the main restaurant. We have the speakeasy.
Yes.
Okay.
And the coffee shop.
And the coffee shop. And where's the bar?
So we have a lounge upstairs off of Remington Hall. So it's the lounge at Remington Hall, as well as the speakeasy, which is going to be one right. level below us, one level below, kind of this subterranean, really cool vibe going on. And that's in Nace.
Now, when locals are listening to this, one of the things they're going to be curious about is, you know, if I want to go try out one of these restaurants, where am I going to park?
I think that's a great question. And you're going to park with us. Right. Because if you are a local and you want to come in and enjoy a meal or a drink or high chocolate with us, we will encourage you to park with us. And it will be complimentary for guests at the restaurant.
Whoa, that's fantastic. I really like that.
Now, with all that meeting space, and I know conferences and things like that are often planned months in advance. Have you been booking things for next summer already? And how's that going?
We've been booking events for January, actually. Mm-hmm. We've been booking events for January through 2027 at the moment, and there has been some interest beyond that. So we're wide open, and we're looking. If you're looking at having an event, we'd love to speak with you.
Now, will you have a ski shop inside the hotel for people who fly in and have to rent?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are working with ski butlers. They are running our ski valet with us.
Mm-hmm.
We want to create as elevated an experience as we can, and we believe that partnering with ski butlers is going to be the way to go. We also have retail space. We have retail space within the hotel. I don't believe that the final signatures have been signed yet, but look forward to sharing who that retail partner is, or the retail partners are, with the audience within the next day or two.
And you expect that you will have a ski shop as one of those retail?
It will be definitely selling ski gear, for sure.
But not snowboards.
Not snowboards.
Okay, so to get, look, this is a major operation. The last time you and I spoke on the air, you were in the midst of hiring. How has that gone? How many people did you have to hire? And how many of those were you able to take from other Hyatt operations to sort of see the operation?
We were able to bring a lot of people in from within the Hyatt community. There's a lot of interest within Hyatt for this opening. It is a significant property, and the Grand Hyatt brand itself is growing, and there's a lot of excitement. So we were able to bring a number of people in from the outside. I, 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 I'm, I'll be honest with you, I'm particularly humbled at the level of interest that there has been in this project, not just from people wanting to come and stay with us or coming in, to eat and drink at the hotel, but also the number of people that want to come and work with us. I think that Hyatt's purpose of caring for people so they can be their best is one element of it, and I think just wanting to work at the at this incredible facility is another one. We have hired all the positions, or the majority of the positions that we were looking at bringing on. We're going to be staffing up, obviously, for the festive season. We're bringing in a lot of people from overseas to help us with that. But I'm very fortunate that a lot of the positions, we still have a few open positions, so if you are interested, please look us up on the website. But we have filled a lot of the positions.
And obviously, this is your first holiday season, and are you pretty much booked for the holidays?
Yeah, we're approaching the holidays in a very measured way. We're not opening with all the rooms that we have available.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, I guess they consider it a soft opening.
Or a powder opening, as we would say here, but yes.
There you go. the occupancy that we're looking at is good for the number of rooms that we have available.
And how many are you going to have for the holidays?
175.
Okay, so that seems like a reasonable way to sort of figure out the kinks.
Exactly.
And I love to ask this question. What have you run into that you didn't expect that's been a problem that has created for you to have to devise a creative solution to?
I probably say the most interesting one is working with MITA mm-hmm. and working with High Valley Transit to try and reroute the transportation route so that there will be a stop at...
There will be a stop?
We're hoping that we're going to be able to get this one across the finish line, yeah. I think there's interest from Deer Valley to make this happen so that they can bring their employees in. There's obviously interest from us to do that as well.
And is there going to be a viable public transportation route from employees who live in Heber?
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's High Valley?
Yeah, it is, yes. Okay.
Good. So if I'm skiing all day and I pop in for Opry Ski and the lifts close, I can take High Valley Transit back to the Park City Depot right here?
Not at this point.
Okay.
We are working to make that happen, and I'm just grateful for the partnership that we've had within the community to try and come up with making this a reality.
Good. So we just mentioned powder a moment ago. What about a powder day? Will the exit off 40 and the whole area around your hotel, will that handle traffic on a powder day?
We are hoping that the answer is yes. It's probably going to be a lot easier to get to Deer Valley East Village or to access Deer Valley East Village, particularly people coming from the residential communities, Heber, Midway, Promontory, mm-hmm. and so on. It's going to, we think it's going to be a lot easier to access Deer Valley East Village than it would be coming into to Park City and Legacy Deer Valley. We also have, I think it's probably going to be around 500 parking spaces, so additional parking spaces. So there is going to be a lot of parking for locals that want to come in.
Yeah, the 500 spaces are Deer Valley East spaces. Will they run a shuttle over to the lift? Is that the plan?
That's the plan. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, they're not your 500 spaces.
They're not off.
Okay.
I wish we had 500 parking spaces.
Holy cow, how many levels of garage do you have?
Okay. Anthony, anything else you want to add before we go?
I just really want to say that we are extraordinarily humbled by the reception that we have received as Hyatt and as the leaders of this incredible hotel by the community. And we just can't wait to open the doors and welcome the community in.
Real quick for the listeners who want to go to, or you know, the text that I just got back from my wife and daughter, what's the website to find out about the High Chocolate?
Yeah, it's the Grand Hyatt website, and it can be accessed through www.hyatt.com and filtering through.
Wonderful.
All right, Anthony, again, thanks for spending time with us. We look forward to, we're hoping you have a spectacular grand opening. The outlets at Park City have a new name, and they're starting a new tradition. It's now called Junction Commons, and they're having their first annual tree lighting this Friday, November 22nd. Joining us to give us some details is Abby Phillips. Good morning, Abby.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. Abby, before we get to Christmas tree lighting, let's talk a little bit about what's generally going on out at the Junction. What are you guys up to?
Well, I'm sure people passing by have seen that we are refreshing the center, updating our color scheme, creating more of a space that we're trying to make more community-driven. It's going to be much more of a hybrid, so we will still have some of those outlet stores, but also bringing in, you know, brand name stores and local stores.
And how long is that process expected to take?
Well, we are almost finished with the refresh. Mm-hmm. We have created a seating area towards the front. If you come into the space, you'll kind of see that we've created this connection from the east to the west, adding in more restaurants over the next couple of years, creating a seating area so that when you do come into the fast casual, you can sit outside, really creating a space that the community can utilize.
I'm trying to visualize this. Is this an outdoor space? Will it be just in the summertime, or will it be heated?
It will not be heated. Okay. It's an outdoor space, but as you know, we make it work.
Yeah, we do make it work. We're all used to sitting outside in our ski clothes. Okay, will there be any physical changes in terms of the buildings themselves? Are you moving anything? Or are you tearing anything down?
No, we are not moving, tearing anything down. Right now, it is really a refresh of the brand, the image, and then the stores that we're bringing into the space.
So traditionally, as you mentioned, it was an outlet mall.
Correct.
And that's not what you're going to be now completely. Talk to us about how you would characterize the nature of the new Junction Commons.
Well, I think that calling it a hybrid is really what we, are going after. You see those outlet stores that are still doing well, that people are still looking for. But then we brought in Ulta Beauty, which just opened. And so that is a big box brand name store. And then we have a lot of local stores. We have Locals Park City. We have JC Country that just opened there based out of Layton, Utah. We have Fulfilled Lifestyle Company. They are an eco-conscious local company. They've been there for 3 years. Bow Collective just celebrated 10 years. So, you know, I think that we're seeing that the community doesn't want to let go of the outlets. There are still a lot of regional people that are coming to shop there, but we also want it to feel local and that we can support our local businesses.
Okay, so you mentioned some restaurants. Will they be big chain places with the Bloomin' Onion, or will they be, you know, local, you know, more local?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
You know, we're talking to two local options, more of the kind of neighborhood stop-in offering. And then some, you know, we added Chipotle and Jersey Mike's. So looking at more fast casual as well, we want it to be a place where people can shop and eat and hang out. We have the awesome playgrounds that are there that I know I've taken my children to many a time. So just wanted to be a space that people feel comfortable to come to.
How about, okay, I'm going to turn off the microphone so that in case it's a secret, actually I'm not, but Trader Joe's, is Trader Joe's coming?
I cannot say.
Oh, she took the fifth. She took the fifth. That's an interesting answer. Okay. Okay, so you're seeking some restaurants. What do you think is missing? What kinds of stores are you looking for that we don't have?
That's a great question, and I'd love to hear from people on what they think, because, right, you know, we really do want it to be community-driven. I just started this position in July, so I'm still kind of, you know, figuring out what it is that the community wants and what we're looking for. We have a nail salon that's coming in. We have a really fun pop-up shop from actually 9th and 9th. It's called Baubles and Lace. She's doing like a mobile fashion truck that'll be there all winter. So we're just looking for fun ideas that are exciting for the community, pop-up kind of experiences that I think are really fun.
Have the merchants been able to, I know that when I stopped by to go to a restaurant, there was obviously all that construction. Have the merchants been able to do well during that construction phase, or has the construction sort of scared people away?
I think construction was definitely hard.
Yeah,
I mean, as it is, right? As we're seeing on Main Street, as we're seeing, you know, where we'll see in Deer Valley. I think that, you know, we are definitely picking back up. We're very thankful that we're getting into the busy holiday season. But we definitely need our locals to come out and shop. And I think that there are a lot of shops that have come in over the past year that maybe locals aren't thinking of. We have Pro Image Sports, which is all, you know, they have the Utah Hockey Club, but then they also have all NFL and NBA. Mm. And I'm a mom of two boys, so I know I'll be going there for Christmas. You know, things like that, where I don't know if the local community realizes what's there.
So let's talk about some more about what's there that people not realize. I mean, the pro sports, I wasn't aware of that. Mm-hmm. What else has come in over the last year or so that people might not be aware of?
So there is a fabulous new store called Blue Sky Nomads. Diane Newland is a local resident. She started out in the Fulfilled Lifestyle Co. They kind of are a co-op. She kind of grew out of that and opened her own business. And what I think is really cool about her is she partners with 25 villages. Women artisans, goes and visits them, has them create these beautiful scarves and tapestries, and brings them to sell here. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, you know, a lost art that a lot of us aren't getting to see. And so I think what she's bringing to the community, too, is really neat.
Now, would there be any, I always wonder why, I know why some restaurants can't give cooking classes, but would there be a space for like a commercial kitchen where people can rent and give a cooking class?
Oh, I love that idea. And I, you know, was talking to a friend of mine recently even about, you know, what does it look like to have a residency? You know, where you can have more pop-up kind of experiences because it, you know, rent is high in this city. If you wanted to start out as a, you know, business owner or a restaurateur, what does that look like? And part of my job as the specialty leasing manager is I get to do a lot of those fun things. I get to kind of come up with those ideas. And so thinking about pop-up shops and thinking about pop-up restaurants and things like that, I think is something that I would, like I said, love to hear from the community on what they think, but also we're looking at, okay, what stores are in Salt Lake that we think would be fun here, you know, looking at like an Albion Fit who is based out of Salt Lake, you know, bringing them here and doing a pop-up shop. Things like that I think would be really fun.
What about a health club? Will there be a, you know, a gym?
Well, they have Bow Collective is there.
Okay.
And so it is, they call it a party in the front and workout in the back, I think. And so it's a store in the front with a lot of your favorite, you know, athletic brands. And in the back, they do have a workout center that's been there for 10 years. It's, you know, a great spot.
Now, is all the construction done? Have all those facades come off?
Yes. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. We do have just a little bit of signage left to do. And then finishing up the signage on our seating area that is in the front where the Christmas tree lighting will be, but having that area is almost finished.
And I do want to make sure you said a couple times you're interested in hearing from the community. How can they communicate with you?
Well, you know, all the social media ways, Facebook and Instagram, I am on those constantly, and I people do reach out that way. Obviously, they can email or call us. Mm-hmm. We really do want to make it community-driven. Something that I'm doing over the next year is planning more events and how can we get more people to the space? How can we get food trucks and live music? You know, just ways for people to hang out and have another, you know, another space to be.
And I want to ask more about that, but I want to make sure we get to the Christmas tree lighting.
Yes. Yeah.
Tell us about that event.
We are so excited. It's this Friday, and we are, you know, bringing out the Park City Singers, which was 40-strong choral group. I'm so excited to have them there. It'll be really interactive, casual. We hope everybody will join in. We'll have food trucks. We'll have giveaways. We did a refresh on the moose statue that's in front of our space, and so took that image and made ski goggle covers, which I am very excited about as the giveaway. So the first 100 people get the free ski goggle covers, which I think will be really fun. So it'll just be a fun event. And then we have our official tree lighter is the Polo Ralph Lauren Bear. So really fun to come out and take pictures with him, and he'll be our official tree lighter.
And what time did the festivities start on Friday?
Starts at 4. The tree lighting will be at 5:30 and goes till 6:30.
Go ahead, Kim.
Yeah, sorry. And how big is this tree?
Oh my gosh, I don't know how big. Oh. It is larger than what is in my home. It's very, very large.
So again, help people visualize where is this going to be. As we drive into the mall, I've got Ralph Lauren and Jersey Mike's on the right.
It's right across the street from Ralph Lauren, and you'll see.
Near the front.
Can't miss it. Yeah, yes.
In that central parking area?
Correct. Okay. Yeah, where this new seating area is, you can't miss it. It's right at the beginning.
Now for years, there has been a lighted statue on the front of the mall. I believe it's a Santa Claus. Is that gone?
No, I think that those are all still there. We are going to reassess our decor over the next few years. But
I like that guy.
I know. I personally really love all the elves that are around. I think they're really cute.
So let's talk about some of the other events that you're thinking about.
Of course.
Over the course of the next year.
So we also have, you know, once again, this community-driven component. On Small Business Saturday, we have a makers market. We have over 25 artists and makers coming.
Where will that be?
That is in the mall in one of the retail shops, right next to Vans. We've partnered with the Arts Council of Park City and Summit County. We just love what they do for local artists. We expanded it to regional artists. We have artists from St. George, from Layton, from here. So we're really excited about what that will be. And then coming spring and summer, we'll be doing more music events, food trucks, things like that, where people, where the community
are. You thinking about having some live music events where you'll have the food trucks, almost like a community gathering?
Yeah,
kind of
exactly.
Event.
Love to team up with Mountain Tom Music and be another one of their stops, you know, throughout the city.
I'm sure they would like that.
Yes.
yeah, because they keep losing spaces.
Oh, well, we'd love to provide
they build
that.
Build them up and stuff.
Exactly. So. Right.
Well, outstanding. Roger, you have anything else you want to know
anything
about?
Anything else you need to tell us before we go, Allie?
You know, I'm just really excited to be a part of Junction Commons and the changes that they're making, and I really do look forward to working with the community on how we can make it an even better space.
Okay. Is it junctioncommons.com to find out about the events?
Yes.
Beautiful.
We've been spending time with Abby Phillips at Junction Commons talking about the upcoming tree lighting ceremony, which, once again, is this Friday starting at 4. The tree lighting itself is at 5:30.
Correct.
It's at the mall, the Junction Commons, just across from the Polo store, correct?
Yes.
All right. Thanks for spending time
with us. Thank you.
We'd like to thank our guests. We started with Stephen Bowers, CPA, talking about various reporting requirements. We then spent time with Crystal Bowman Carter as we all contemplate our deaths and talked about estate planning. We then spoke to Anthony Duggan about the new Grand Hyatt Deer Valley. And we just finished our hour by speaking with Abby Phillips about the Junction Commons and their upcoming tree lighting ceremony this Friday. Our theme music was written by Parker Swenson and is performed by Swenson, David Becker, and Tony Ellison.
If you have any ideas for Mountain Money, please shoot us an email at mountainmoney@kpcw.org.
Please subscribe to the Mountain Money podcast to stay on top of all the latest episodes of KPCW's Mountain Money. Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the show, make sure you leave a review no matter how you listen. And we'd appreciate it if you clicked 5 stars.